PC Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, and all-around pain in my butt sometimes.
Today's show is sponsored by Shutting Up. Remember? That was the policy from last week.
Oh, you remembered you all the way. Shut up. You remembered about all the way
all from, the way from last week.
You've got a good memory.
I know.
I'm
an elephant.
Yeah. So over there to my left, Hottie Patati Will Schmidt, fitness trainer I was going to say guru, but...
Fancy pants.
Fancy pants to the stars. Yeah. He knows cool people.
He knows cool stuff.
Uh-huh.
I do.
Today, we have a continued show. Last week, we started, but these guys got long-winded. I didn't even hardly talk at all, y'all. Sorry.
You fell asleep.
Oh, gosh, I know. about the truth about acid and alkaline balance. I know y'all were all crying because y'all were like, where's Kenan? Her dumb comments.
Yeah,
we need more of those.
We want that.
Yeah.
So we're going to continue, but we're going to get into questions really early or we'll get in trouble.
Well, I hope none of these people died waiting for the
answer. I know.
Answer.
That could have been a problem.
Yeah, that would suck.
Because then we would only have three listeners.
They were too acid or they were too alkaline.
Man. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say, Kenna, before we say
Well,
that?
I could say something about, if you haven't liked us on Facebook, you should go ahead and do that, because
yeah.
That's where we post all these topics about future shows. You guys can ask us questions, you can weigh in, you can give us information that's inaccurate, and we'll correct it. And, you can also give us future show topics. That's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Because we're running out. I mean, I had some brilliant ideas, but those are all gone.
Those are done. She won't have any more.
For at least a year.
Right. It's a sad time. So before we get into questions, let's talk about a bunch of stuff for 30 and 40 minutes.
Oh, good Lord, again.
That's what we did last time.
Straighten me up when you're done,
Let's just talk about this now. Simmer down. Now, we talked last week about how the best way to look at whether you're leaning too acid and too alkaline. We went into how breath rate is the most effective way to look at that, and we covered that after we talked about how the old alkalizing diet is mostly stupid. So let's talk about the secondary test and how breath hold time works and how to do that test on yourself.
Yeah. So basically, you just time how long you can hold your breath.
Good job.
That's all I have.
Yeah, so that's all you got to do.
But I'm not. It is an okay test. I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, the reason it's not so great is because if you're trying to make it a contest and you're like, I'm going to win, I'm going to hold it forever, and then you turn blue and you pass out, you just kind of want to hold it for as long as it is comfortable for you to hold your breath.
Yeah, but I mean, there's some oddball things that'll throw it off sometimes. Like, some people get really uncomfortable and like just the idea of it makes them nervous, so they only hold it for like 10 seconds. They're like, done. I'm done. They don't want to do it. Yeah. And then other people are super well trained, like they were swimmers or scuba divers. I've had surfers hold their breaths for like 4 minutes. It's like it's ridiculous. So, and it's because they had this like training to like learn how to like hold their breath longer than other people and to tolerate that discomfort, mm-hmm. They're able to tolerate higher acid levels in their blood when they do that. Mm-hmm. But the reason it kind of works as a tool is if someone is leaning too alkaline in their bloodstream, they can tolerate holding their breath longer because it's more comfortable for them to let CO2 build up in their bloodstream.
And body's not in such a hurry.
Is that what kills you when you drown? I mean, besides your lungs filling up with water, but just becoming so acid in your blood that you just die?
Yeah.
No.
The
interesting thing is that the rate at which we breathe, most people think it's to get oxygen out, but a lot of it has to do with getting the CO2 out of the body.
Yeah. So when you don't have enough CO2 in your body, it's more comfortable to hold your breath longer because it lets CO2 build up. And for some people, it's actually relaxing. Like if you're really alkaline, like to hold your breath, you start to get a sense of ease, you know. But if someone's too acid already, then when they start to hold their breath and the CO2 just keeps piling up really fast for them, it's harder to like retain it, and they need to like exhale and breathe in fresh air again quicker than someone who's too alkaline.
Right, and if you didn't hear part one of the show, we really explained all this a lot. So go back and listen to part one. It's probably important to get into this because we're mostly going to answer a lot of questions and stuff today. So
oh, good.
With breath hold time, though, you know, an ideal time is about 50 seconds is what you want to be holding your breath. So if you can only hold it for 15, or if you can hold it for 3 minutes, that can be an indicator of going too acid or too alkaline. But we really put a lot more weight on the breath rate,
which should be right around 15 or 16 without you trying to make it faster or slower.
Right. So let's get into questions since we're supposed to shut up.
But first, today all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details.
Audible.com.
All right, so Weber. Oh, well, this was in response to Laura, who was the first question, the only question we got through. So should I read Laura's question?
Sure, and just remember that last week we answered a question.
Laura. So, Laura, you're not going to get it answered
but
again.
We answered a question.
Yeah. We did.
So, okay, Laura from Los Angeles, California. What's the best way to know if you're imbalanced in either direction? Okay, go back and listen, Laura. Weber, Laura, if you feel like crap, too acid or too alkaline, there is a guy on YouTube who successfully manipulated his levels with baking soda. He said when he tested most alkaline, he had headaches and other symptoms. I have a feeling that Tony's going to say something.
Get him, Tony.
This guy is full of it.
I'm not going to yell at him because that's what all the gurus are teaching, is that you can alkalize yourself by using baking soda. I mean, a lot of people
teach. And you said you ate it out of a box last time when you were back doing
fun,
that.
I was making fun of the people that do that.
You can alkalize yourself. Yeah, you can. Certainly can.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a good idea. And another thing I don't want to sneak past is that if you feel like crap, that doesn't mean that you're too acid or too alkaline. There's lots of reasons to feel like crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a wide variety of things.
Just
listen to all of our previous shows.
Just watch CNN.
Yeah, if you watch the news, you will.
Yeah. Or going to work.
yeah, right. Yeah.
Don't you work here?
Yeah. That's why it's not good for her.
I'm kidding.
But, you know, Will touched on last episode how baking soda, it does have the ability to alkalize your bloodstream, but you're also alkalizing your stomach acid and turning that off.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. You want to digest the food you eat.
Yeah. Right.
Because your digestion is like your root system.
It's like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, good.
Sometimes I retain just a little.
So I don't quite get it. I don't know if there wasn't a question with Weber, right? He was just
trying to be smarty pants.
Gotcha. Okay.
So Debbie, all of my pHs show that I'm alkaline and my headaches are much worse now.
Okay, Debbie, we're going to have to talk to you about right. this. Right. Step away from the alkalizing drops.
So it's not, I mean, I guess if you're looking at your urine or your saliva pHs to try to figure out if you're too acid or alkaline, that's the wrong place to start.
Right, and there's a lot of causes for headaches. We do have a whole episode on headaches that you can listen to, but I'm going to guess, and I'm just guessing here because I don't know her chemistry, but I kind of feel like that if her urine pH is high enough that she thinks that she's alkaline, that she is getting the huge spikes and crashes of blood sugar when she eats carbs, and that's where her headaches are happening. Huh. Debbie, tell us this. Do your headaches, are they usually in the front of your head? Debbie?
She left the phone.
Oh, we don't
have
phones.
Live calls. No, these are written questions.
All right, well, I was going to help her, but she doesn't want to answer. But so, you know, where your headaches originate can kind of give you some information. But about half of the headaches that we see usually come from people where the sugars are going too high, or they're going real high and then crashing too low too quickly. Mm. And a high urine pH could cause that. Explain away, Will Schmidt.
Because insulin is a hormone that the strength of which is affected by pH. So if the pH
of the urine, not of
the
body, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like people view it as, I'm too acidic.
That's, right.
We don't want you to say that anymore.
Right. So one thing that we see correspondence with is when the urine pH is too high, it creates an internal environment where insulin is stronger than it would be otherwise. So it's more effective at taking blood out of taking sugar out of the bloodstream and ushering it into the tissues faster. So when people have a very high urine pH, that action of insulin happens too quickly. So they'll get too fast a drop in blood sugar. And with that, they'll run into hypoglycemic issues where they'll get headaches from that.
Yeah, and it's tricky because the steps that a lot of the pH gurus teach actually raise urine pH because they think that they're viewing what the body's doing just by looking at urine pH. But a lot of the people that we see that are just miserable and having a horrible time come in with a really high urine pH, and when we help them fix that, they totally turn around all kinds of troubling issues like anxiety and constipation and stuff like that. It's really tricky.
All right, Kathy. Does it matter when I test my pHs? Kathy wasn't listening just now.
Well, to her credit, she did write that before we started the show.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, pHs in your urine and saliva do matter, but for different reasons. We don't use it to indicate if your blood or your overall body is too acid or alkaline, which doesn't even really make sense to say that, but we use it as important markers to know if your body chemistry is imbalanced in different respects. So if your saliva pH, for example, is really low, we usually see there's a correspondence with impaired liver function and bile production.
Or some kind of toxicity.
Yeah, where there's bile is being depleted and the liver is overwhelmed. So there's something usually off with liver function if we see really low saliva pH. And then when we look at urine pH, one of the there's different things that we can do to manipulate our urine pH to make our insulin have a more balanced strength. But we also use urine pH as an indicator of if the body's chemistry is leaning too anabolic or catabolic. Sometimes we'll see a higher urine pH when someone is leaning into anabolic state and a lower urine pH when someone's leaning more catabolic. So we use those urine pH markers for that more so than is the person acid or alkaline. We look at breath rate with that.
While you're on that topic, why don't you ask Bill's question, Kenneth, because that's what he just asked.
All right, Bill, Cape Cod, Massachusetts. What if your urine pH is acidic but your saliva pH is very alkaline?
Right, so people get confused, but we'll just explain that that's usually an indication of is the body leaning too anabolic or catabolic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we see a big spread, like the urine pH is very low and the saliva pH is really high, that's more of a catabolic trait. Whereas if it's flipped, that's a big problem. Like if the urine pH is higher than the saliva pH, that's a whole different issue. But when the urine pH is high and the saliva pH is low and they're kind of like close to each other, like the urine's like 6.5 and the saliva is like 6.6, that's more of an anabolic trait.
And a lot of the gurus, when you look at it, they want that saliva pH to be around 7, where we like to see that too. But they want the urine pH to be even higher. And what we see when that's the case is that the body's almost operating in an upside down, flipped over, backwards manner. And a lot of crazy symptoms can be improved just by flipping the pHs back and correcting that.
Yeah, and then that has a lot to do with the whole thing we were talking about last week, where we talked about ions flowing like batteries, where there needs to be, when you put like a battery into a handheld device or something, it needs to be in the right way so that the ions flow the correct way. And when we see the urine pH higher than the saliva pH, there's a problem with the way ions are going to flow through the body and in the bloodstream, and we want to correct that. That's a big, big priority. So we'll usually, if we see that, we'll usually recommend someone do something to intentionally acidify the urine, like use vitamin C as ascorbic acid or MSM or something like that to push the urine pH down.
Right, and before we move on, I can hear Kathy screaming right now that, wait, that wasn't my question, because she wants to know, does it matter when she tests the pH. So, but your answer was appropriate. I mean, it was
2 hours after.
Yeah, him. Yeah. Good. I thought you were saying 2 hours after Will answered.
Oh, yes, 2 hours after Will answered. Right. No, two hours after eating. If you're testing it for something else.
Yeah. So you want to test at least 2 hours after eating, because after you eat, your body's kind of like going to war, and digestion is all the stuff is going on. So you don't want to know what pHs are at that time. You want to see what it is when the body's at rest.
It's also good to know the urine pH naturally kind of changes throughout the day. So your urine pH should be more acidic earlier in the day when your body's supposed to be more catabolic. And then it should naturally drift to be a little bit more alkaline as the evening progresses. But it still should be in a general range of like around 6.0. And if it gets much higher than that, like if it's around 6.5 or even 7, you'll, even at night, like that's too high for it. So it's useful to check it at different points in the day to make sure that you're generally staying in that healthy range around 6.0.
And I usually recommend that people don't test urine pH the first urine of the morning, because that you're kind of getting rid of the metabolic debt from the day before, kind of thing.
And definitely don't test your saliva pH when you're even thinking about food.
Right.
It'll cause a secretion of bicarbonate salts, which will make your saliva really... Yeah.
So I can never test.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but all that enzymatic activity in your saliva can change when you start thinking about food, and then it goes higher.
Pizza. All right, Lori from Mobile. Or is it Mobile or Mobile?
Oh, yeah.
Mobile. That was Mobile.
Really? Because I've heard people say it different ways, but we'll just say Mobile. I've heard that an acidic diet can cause osteoporosis.
So here's some things that I'd like to mention. There's two ways to look at this, and you hear about it two different ways. As one is that you're so acidic that you're melting your bones, and that's why you have osteoporosis. And it just makes me want to shake somebody. Because the bloodstream, when it is acidic, quote unquote, it's like this very, it's a little fraction that's leaning a little more acidic. And if it went like a full, 2 points more acidic, you'd be kind of dead in most cases. Mm-hmm. So it's a very small fraction. It's not enough to melt down.
It would melt a bone?
Yeah, it's not going to melt any bone. But other people explain it in a way that I say that the American diet is so acidic that the body pulls calcium out of the bones to neutralize that acid that you're creating, and now you have osteoporosis.
Is that a common cause of death, blood too acidic? Because I've never heard. Will your blood go, like, could it go 2 points, and then them say, wow, his blood just went too acid?
I think you could take some kind of something or other, poison. Or, yeah.
Oh, okay. Acid. But then that probably wouldn't be the cause. They'd right, say they it would, was poison.
Or, yeah, they wouldn't say, that guy needed to alkalize. Yeah, they'd say he was poisoned by this kind of thing.
I could just see, like,
too much battery acid in that smoothie.
This one needs to alkalize into their little
right, so,
quarter.
But something else that we see a lot, and especially when we talk about osteoporosis, is that there's a lot of reasons that the body will pull minerals out of the bones. And one of those is consuming a lot of starches, carbohydrates, sugars, because calcium will follow sugar. So it'll pull it out of the tissues and can eventually pull it out of the bones. But one thing that really... it makes me kind of laugh at what they even talk about here is because they tell us that vitamin D is very alkalizing and that we should have a lot of vitamin D so that we can become more alkaline. But vitamin D pulls calcium out of the tissues and even the bones in higher doses, just like a quote-unquote acidic food would, according to what they're saying. So that's not that true. That's not something that you want to do. But what we see when we're looking at osteoporosis is usually the body is looking for phosphorus in many of the cases. And when it pulls phosphorus, calcium comes with that. And yes, calcium can be one of those buffering systems, and it does help, but we find that it's the lungs do the bigger amount of that load for most people.
Buffering?
They're doing more of the buffering. It's blowing out the CO2. For most people, the main buffering system is not pulling calcium out of the bones. So there's a lot of reasons that someone could be experiencing osteoporosis, but the blood leaning a little bit too acidic is not the most common one.
Yeah, and an acidic diet too, like just clarifying what exactly that means. I know like the general thoughts of like there's different lists of acid and alkaline foods, but as we talked about a lot last week, that's not how it works. Like it's not the ashes of the acidic foods that end up making you acid or alkaline. It has a lot more to do with what your body does with the different foods, how your metabolism is working, what metabolic processes your cells are performing to make energy, and what the byproducts of those things are. Like, is it making too much lactate and ammonia, or is it making sufficient amounts of CO2? All those things matter more than the ash of the food, whether the ash of the food is acid or alkaline. Like, that's when we look at osteoporosis, really, like you, one of the things you mentioned already was like too many starches or too much vitamin D can pull calcium out. But then there's other reasons why we can find errant calcium metabolism and calcium being extracted from the bones and ended up like accumulating in places that it shouldn't be through different like metabolic processes that have to do with failures of energy production at the cellular level. When we start to get calcium retention and accumulation in like bones and in tumors and inside the mitochondria of cells, blocking energy production. And it has a lot to do with the cells not being able to make energy in a proper way. So almost always people will classify like meats as an acidic food. So they'll avoid meats, right? And they just avoid all animal proteins right. while they're at it, you know? Right. So then all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, but maybe in a couple months, their body becomes protein deficient. And now their cells are stuck performing energy production without proper metabolic processes. And their mitochondria can't make energy in a healthy way because the thyroid isn't running right, because there's no nitrogen, because there's no protein in the diet. And now the cells start to retain way more calcium and start to mine calcium from the bones, and the calcium gets stuck in the tissues and creates like arthritis issues and cancers and things like that. And we look at like, well, the source of that in that instance, in that example, was a complete lack of protein in the diet, which is classified an acidic food, but ends up leading to osteoporosis through that
right chain. And they also removed one of the body's best buffering systems, which is the protein.
Yeah.
And people often ask me, you know, when I look at these lists of alkalizing foods, why are they all different? And I have to explain to them, well, if none of those lists are accurate, they're allowed to vary greatly yeah. from list to list,
right?
Because none of them have any truth to them,
right?
But as far as like acidic food, like would a lemon or lime be acidic?
No, and because they actually say that a lemon and a lime is actually an alkalizing food, even though it is an acidic food, that it has an alkalizing reaction on the body.
Because it's ridiculous.
Right. So, you know, when you look at, let's say a person can process sugars correctly and they're not insulin resistant, you know, a bag of Cheetos, according to what they're looking at, because if they're looking at urine pH and deciding is this person acid or alkaline, a bag of Cheetos is one of the most alkalizing foods you could eat
yeah.
because those sugars and carbs are going to pull calcium out of the tissues and pull it into the bloodstream and raise the pH of that urine.
I'm going to alkalize tonight.
Yeah, you're going
to have a big old steak and Cheetos.
But good job. Kendall learned a lot this episode.
Yeah. It's true though, proteins are the most potent like nutritional buffer. And when we cut those out, like the body's out of all sorts of reserves that it would like to use to buffer against its natural metabolic acids.
Well, let me take their side for just about 17 seconds.
Okay.
Because if someone's eating animal proteins that are from Jack in the Box or, you know, some kind of garbage protein that you would get at a normal butcher that's not organic or grass-fed or any of that stuff, and it's pumped with all these hormones and
pink sludge.
Yeah, there's some has a side of pink sludge. All of those toxins could be, quote-unquote, creating acids in the body, and all of a sudden that meat is an acidic food.
Or they're not digesting it because they don't have stomach acid. Then it's a big problem.
Probably should have mentioned that one.
You like that? Up them. But meats can be a big problem and could potentially indirectly contribute to osteoporosis if they're full of garbage, like you said, or you're not digesting them properly.
Yeah. So before we go to these next questions, I want to explain that all four of our listeners are pretty smart. And they have a better understanding of this. So I kind of wanted to get, you know, what's the general consensus of what people view this, especially if they're doing a diet like this. So I found an alkalizing forum to find some of the questions that people ask on there, just so that we could get like a layman's view.
I wondered what that was. Forum questions. Funny. I was like, what's this?
Yeah, so these next questions are...
bust through them?
Yeah, we'll just rip through a couple.
All right, forum questions. Al, Myrtle Beach. I'm on an alkaline diet, but I get reflux and assume too much stomach acid is making me more acidic. Mm-mm. How can I reduce my stomach acid without using drugs?
So, see, it's very clear that Al has never heard a single word we have ever
Al, spoke. kickitinthenuts.com.
Yeah. So, but an important thing to understand is that, like we'll explain before, different compartments of the body should consist of at different pH levels. So you want the stomach to be very acidic, and the acid that is within that stomach is not seeping out into the whole system, making the system more acidic. It does not.
Maybe unless he has a hole in his stomach.
Yeah, it would have to be a lot of holes.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, we have a whole episode on acid reflux, and the reflux really occurs from there being not enough acid in the stomach to kill bacteria and to trigger the valves of the stomach to seal shut and tight. And when there is enough acid, you don't get reflux unless you have a hiatal hernia. You don't get reflux because it kills the bacteria in the stomach if there's enough acid in there. So there's no bacteria to create off-gassing and pressure. And it's that pressure that causes the regurgitation of the contents of the stomach up the esophagus. So the acid kills that bacteria, no off-gassing, and also chemically triggers the valves of the stomach to seal shut and tight so that there's no reflux that occurs when there's enough.
So it's a case of you want that acid to be there, and that acid is supposed to be there. And as it leaves the stomach, it's neutralized by bile and bicarb and all these other reactions so that it doesn't continue going through the system in that acidic state. And when it does, it's called diarrhea. Some people call it IBS or Crohn's, or there's lots of other names. And those things.
I call it bad words.
Oh, bad words. And some of those issues can have other causes too. We've talked about those on a lot of other shows. But just don't view. Well, maybe just don't view the alkalizing thing as correct anymore, and that you don't have to change your view on anything else.
Yeah.
Just view all of that as wrong, and then you're golden.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Good job, Al.
Holly, if I'm avoiding acidic animal meat, what are the best sources of protein?
So I guess you just covered that one, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's not acidic, Holly. But if you are going to avoid the meat part, then have collagen and eggs.
There you go.
Just which have a bowl of collagen.
Right, big old bowl of collagen, gelatin. Just have because the meats, they are definitely high quality proteins, but even better amino acid profiles exist in the collagen and gelatin products, and eggs are also pretty great.
Our protein powder has collagen in it, so just use that. Instead of eating other stuff, just use our protein
powder. Yeah, mm-hmm. Shameless plug.
Dun, dun, dun.
If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com. Well, Michael, I know vitamin D is alkalizing, but if I take too much, I get a cold sore.
Yes, you do, Michael. Yes, you do.
So don't take too much.
So when we talked about that a little bit earlier, how sugars can pull calcium out of the tissues, and just like vitamin D, and keep in mind that some vitamin D is good. We're grateful to have some vitamin D. It's needed to help pull calcium out of the intestinal tract into the system. We have to have that. But when we take the high doses that people suggest that we take, a lot of people start pulling too much calcium out of the tissues and out of bones and all kinds of places. It turns into like a huge shop vac, sucking calcium from everywhere into the bloodstream. And when there's not enough calcium at the tissue level, explain what that does and why somebody would get a cold sore.
Well, it makes the cells more susceptible to viral problems, and it also can keep the immune system from responding appropriately.
So, yeah, really, it kind of doesn't know that there's even a problem.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about almost like calcium can almost function like an alarm system, like when there's an invader, and when it's absent, the alarm just doesn't go off. So we don't get a proper immune response when calcium is in the wrong place.
So a lot of people with cold sores, we help them stop the problem that's pulling all the calcium out, or we help them push calcium back into the tissues using things like lysine or maybe some olive oil or something that can, salmon maybe even. And when they do that, the cold sores go away because all of a sudden the immune system can work again. So first of all, we know that we don't want to try and alkalize with vitamin D. If your bloodstream really was too acidic, you'd probably want to work on some other things instead of just using vitamin D and pulling calcium out of the tissues.
Mm-hmm.
but you don't want to have cold sores, because while that cold sore is there, you know the immune system is kind of turned off and the door's kind of open to any other invader that wants to come in and take over and have a keg party.
Yeah.
Woohoo. All right, Lisa, from Willingston, and I think this was a typo.
No, this is just a, we had a bonus question.
I know,
we had time.
But the D.C., what state is D.C.? I think it's
District
a typo.
Of
I think it was it? Oh, was it? Oh,
District of
maybe.
Columbia, like Washington,
oh,
D.C.
Okay.
Yeah, can't
oh,
ask here for
gosh.
All week.
I hear you. I'm here all week, people. All right, so my digestive issues really suck. I'm new to all this and really appreciate and need to learn about this. My appendix was yanked after my sixth child and my gallbladder after my seventh and last child. My question is, when I have a bad bout of the runs, sometimes yellow water comes out and burns. What is it? I was told I had H. pylori a few years ago as well. I heard it stays in your system. Is that true? Thanks again for your help.
Lisa, seven kids is too many
that's
people.
That's where you first went wrong.
She probably, no, she probably is happy about that.
But that's too many people in your house.
It's a lot of people.
Anyways, we had five kids.
So get rid of a few kids. No. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
No, but Lisa, look at this. You know, when you've had your gallbladder removed, you know that there is no bile that's sitting there stored in the gallbladder ready to squirt down into the duodenum when the acid leaves the stomach, so that acid can't be neutralized. And when we see somebody that has a stool that's lighter color, we know that usually the bile flow is having a problem, because it's the bile, it's this dark green bile that makes our stool a darker color. So when you see something that's yellow, you can say, okay, my bile is a bile issue there. And when it comes screaming out and it's burning, you're like, okay, that acid that left the stomach never got neutralized, so the body just kind of rushed it through the system so that it didn't break down the intestinal tract.
And she doesn't have a gallbladder, so she's not storing in bile or whatever. The bile production isn't there if
right,
she doesn't have
right.
a gallbladder. So.
Right, so we know that the acid can't get neutralized with those. There's not a gallbladder. And while this hot stuff is moving through there, the body will also usher extra water to kind of help cool it off and neutralize it a little bit, and all that water is going to make the loose stool episode. You look like you have something to say to this, Will Schmidt.
Oh, I mean, I'm just agreeing with all.
Oh, good job.
Yeah.
But she's going to have to learn to use ox bile as a supplement.
Right.
And she definitely could still have H. pylori and can...
Yeah, it can stay around for a long time, and even if you treat it, it can slowly come back. It's a hard thing to get rid of, but if you go to kickitinthenuts.com and just put in H. pylori in the search box, you'll find an article that I posted on there, and it lists all these different things that people use to help wipe out H. pylori. And it seems that you need to use more than one thing and kind of take a multi-angled attack to really wipe it out. Even if you're using pharmaceutical drugs, it seems like most people need to use more than one thing to attack it. And you have to be aggressive with it. So that's one thing you could do. But I also really recommend taking our free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. It's free. And in that course, we talk about some gallbladder issues or people who can't make enough bile for other reasons. And there's a whole page that explains how to use ox bile in that situation, because it's tricky. You have to do it away from food. You don't want to use ox bile with your food because it's very alkalizing. You're going to neutralize your ability to digest food. So there's some kind of tricks that help you understand the timing of when to take it and the dose and all that kind of stuff. So each person has to kind of figure out what works for themselves. But you can improve this, and then you won't have kids knocking on the door like, Mom, what are you doing in there? And you're like, shut up.
Yeah,
it's diarrhea.
I mean, the one good thing in all this is we know she has a good reproductive system.
Yeah.
There are some things working correctly.
Yeah.
To be able to make seven kids and still be able to type out like full sentences like that.
And still have your sanity?
Lisa
that's
is awesome.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, that's a tough job. So just know that with the lack of gallbladder situation, the ox bile is something that you'll have to use forever. You know, there's not many things that we talk about.
But you still use like bait flow as well, or
yeah. There can be reasons to use that, and that's explained on the video page I just talked about. So check that out, because usually when somebody's lost their gallbladder, it's because there was a bile flow issue and things got backed up, and that biliary pathway could still be blocked even though the gallbladder's gone.
And what does your appendix do?
You know, it's kind of in the intestinal tract down towards the bottom. And people for a long time were like, it doesn't do anything. We'll just take it out.
That's what I always heard.
But the theory now is that, because when you have diarrhea, which
it controls everything.
Yeah, it's the whole.
It's actually your brain.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the control second center. But like when Lisa has an episode of diarrhea, and it's just nice for to talk about somebody else's diarrhea other than Kenna's on the show. Because for a long time.
But I was glad to hear she has the yellow episodes too. Because I've had those.
So when you have diarrhea and it's very acidic like that, you can kind of fry all of your beneficial bacteria. So the theory that we have now is that appendix is kind of like a little hiding place for some bacteria to go in. So when you have diarrhea, you don't wipe out everything, and you have like this little starter kit of bacteria that can replenish.
But she doesn't have that now either, so she doesn't.
Right, so there's no
real
starter kit.
Yeah.
So
probiotics.
Probiotics could be helpful once she fixes the diarrhea. Otherwise, it's just like throwing children into a volcano, constantly having diarrhea.
Don't give her any ideas, Tony.
No, that's not going to work out. Lisa, you can improve this situation. It's just going to take work, and you'll have to do it with the ox bile forever, or until someone gives you your gallbladder back. I don't think they're going to do that. Okay, so let's do a recap of these two episodes and what we learned about acid, alkaline imbalance, and stuff like that.
Your breath rate's the best way to tell if your bloodstream is leaning too acid or alkaline. The slower your breath rate, the more alkaline you are.
And where should somebody start to be concerned that they're imbalanced?
Ideal breath rate's around 15 or 16, so if you're much slower than that, like around 11, 10, or around 18, 19, 20, then you're leaning.
Yeah, symptoms seem to show up more 10 and below and 19, 20 and above. Right. 20 and above, really.
Yeah, so that's how you check it, rather than urine or saliva pH, although urine and saliva pH are useful for other reasons. Acid and alkaline food lists are ridiculous.
We learned that.
Yeah. Foods
are wrong? Which lists are wrong? We can't remember.
The pH ones.
Right. Baking soda is only good for your fridge to make it not smell good.
Right. Or laundry.
Oh, yeah. Good. You can put what it about in teeth too? Brush.
Yeah, I guess you can brush it. You just don't swallow it. Yeah. If you're going to try to fix an acid or alkaline balance, you want to like focus on correcting your overall digestion and metabolism, and look at where your body might be in and out of balance in the other points of homeostasis that are greater priorities. Like, is your body too catabolic or anabolic, or a slow oxidizer or a fast oxidizer? And we talk more in depth about those imbalances in other episodes.
And you know, if you want to hear there was a recent episode, it was a week or two ago, on energy production. If your breath rate is really fast or really slow, we talk about foods that you could change toward eating immediately for some quick improvement while you work to improve the underlying issue altogether.
Mm. There is, like, when you are also a little bit concerned about being too alkaline, there is kind of a quick fix thing you can do with drinking carbonated water.
Yeah.
That doesn't screw up your stomach acid, because that carbonated water is acidic. And it can help push your bloodstream to be more acidic. But you also want to look at the reasons why your bloodstream and your cells aren't producing enough carbon dioxide in themselves, which usually has to do with the energy production issues that we
talked
about.
Right, and it's worth to look at what your fasting blood sugar is, first of all, to see if you're leaning insulin resistant, and maybe you're not processing carbs at all, or there might be some other thyroid issues or something else going on too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the pretty good review.
The main things. Okay.
Yeah. So the main thing is to just to understand that looking at your urine and saliva pH is not an indication of what's going on in your bloodstream. It can be valuable information to use. It's just not valuable for that. So don't do that anymore. I think we did it.
All right. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. And go to healthprocourse.com to learn more about how to become a health coach. You can also go on over to Hotty Patati Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net, and he's got a lot of great stuff on his page as well.
What we'll do is we'll see you next week.
Okay. Or we'll hear, we won't see or hear you. We'll talk to you. We'll read you next week.
Yeah. Just maybe I should have just said bye.